This resource has been made available to you by Religious Affections Ministries. For more resources, including articles, books, and podcasts, visit www.religiousaffections.org.
This is Scott Annual. I'm here with Michael Riley again to discuss the issue of Christian rap. To summarize our first discussion, we acknowledge that rap, in terms of current culture, certainly has a lot of baggage, which in and of itself does not necessarily make it unusable. And I think that even those who would defend reformed rap would admit the current cultural baggage that there is. But the question then becomes, what is needed in terms of presuppositions in order to lead us to a position that says we may take the form of hip-hop, the musical form of rap, the culture of hip-hop, and use it for the good of the gospel, use it to proclaim biblical truth. And the conclusions that Michael laid out were, first, that we have to believe that form in and of itself does not intrinsically communicate anything, that any of the baggage that exists is merely conventional association. And that leads us then to a belief that if Christ really is Lord over all, which we certainly believe, then it is really incumbent upon us to assert his lordship over the culture of hip-hop, to assert the lordship of Christ over rap, and to use it for the good of the gospel. We discussed biblical authority and the fact that the Bible is sufficient for this issue in really two ways. Number one, that it is sufficient to equip us for every good work, no matter what issue we face. The Bible does have something to say about it. Essentially, we're attempting to obey the command of Ephesians 4:29 to not let anything corrupt by way of communication proceed out of us, but only that which is good to the use of edifying. And Michael explained that the Bible really is in many parts a model for us in terms of the kinds of forms that we should use to communicate our God. The Bible is not merely propositions. It is communicated in a certain way, especially in the sections of poetry, communicating certain things to our hearts, certain ways not just to believe about God, but to feel about God. And so that leads us then in this podcast to discuss this issue of the meaning of form. And let me ask you first, Mike, do you think that there is a level of meaning that is purely conventional?
Yeah, I think that's indisputable. The kind of the classic example of this that we've tended to bring up, one of the great kind of stately hymns of the faith, "Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken," is most often in our churches set to a tune named "Austrian Hymn," which, as I understand it, was used by Nazi Germany as the national anthem.
Right.
And for most Christians in our churches today who don't know that, there's no issue. You know, we sing "Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken," and they don't think Nazi Germany.
Right, right.
But there are people that, either because of their historical knowledge or because of their life experiences, would in fact know that. And that is, there's nothing in the music of
right.
Austrian Hymn that speaks of Nazism,
right.
Per se. But it is associated with Nazism.
I actually heard of a missionary who introduced that hymn in Great Britain to his congregation a number of years ago, and introduced that hymn, and an older British gentleman stood up, stormed out of the auditorium, slammed the door,
sure.
And the missionary thought, what's going on? But he had suffered through bombings of World War II, and he heard that melody, it brought back to his mind terrible fascism.
Sure.
Which didn't have the same kind of meaning to other people.
Right. Yeah, and so that is a meaning that's associative.
Right.
But here's the other side of it. Why would that tune be used as a national anthem
mm-hmm.
for anybody?
Yeah.
Well, it seems to intrinsically, not associatively, but rather intrinsically, to be, we talked about it being a stately tune or something majestic. There's something stirring about it. You know,
right.
It kind of grabs you by the heart and says, you know, the text that we sing to it is a hymn, "Glorious Things of Thee Are Spoken, Zion City of Our God."
It's victory and celebration.
It's not even just victory. It's almost patriotic.
Oh, yeah.
In a
right.
sort, you know, it's,
yeah.
this is really my homeland.
Right.
You know,
right.
it's not fatherland Germany. It's Zion, city
yeah.
of our God.
Yeah.
And so the tune is used a certain way because the tune says something.
Right.
Now, when we talk about intrinsic meaning, it's always difficult to talk about, because first, to separate associative meaning and intrinsic meaning is not something that we can put the hard line we'd love
right.
to put there.
Right.
You know, so
yeah.
with you and me and issues like this, we would love to be able to say, oh, this is where the associative meaning, and this is where the intrinsic meaning is right here, and it means, and we can't do that, right? It's just not that easy. People are messy creatures,
right.
and that's
we're
important.
Finite, we're fallible,
exactly, yeah. and we just don't see the neat lines here. So the other reason that this is difficult is explaining why something is intrinsically a certain way. So even if we say that it is, why is it that way?
Right.
And I even
would qualify it. I believe that there's intrinsic meaning, but that word is difficult for some people.
Sure.
Is it in the notes themselves that somehow there's meaning there? I've tended lately to even move away from calling it that and admit that it is associative meaning. But it's not conventional association. In other words, it's not arbitrary. It's association with something that's more universal
universal to all humans.
True, right.
And when we talk about universal, you know, it's like, I don't know how Martians respond
yeah,
to
music, right?
But I do know how people do.
And that's a great point, because I would suggest that music on one level, beneath all of the, certainly the conventional association, and by the way, we would admit that fades away, that comes and goes,
right.
It's different from one person to another person, but beneath all of that, there is a level of association with which the music mimics or reflects experiences that all humans share,
yeah.
And in that way, it is universal to human beings.
Right, I think that's true. With, you know, we have the example of march music being
yeah.
a very clear example of it, and
we wouldn't use a march as a lullaby
or
in a wedding
or for meditation. Another example that I've tended to use is limerick meter. This is where the mystery of this whole thing comes in. But the limerick meter, da 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 da. Why is that funny?
Yeah.
And my answer is, I don't know. I don't know why that, but it is.
The closest we can get is that it sounds like light, skippy silliness or something.
It does.
How do you peg that down?
I can't. But I can't even conceive of the possibility of that being used for. I'm going to write my doctoral dissertation, and I can't write it in limerick.
Yeah, right.
You know, you just can't use that form.
Some forms that just
that
can't,
way.
Yeah, right. So to turn it around the other way, kind of what we're saying then is, or we're asking the defenders of Christian hip hop, would it even be possible for another form? Say the classical music form, which is, you know, a broad term, but could that form have that same kind of baggage that hip-hop has today,
mm-hmm.
if we were to flip the conversation? Is it just happenstance that form of rap and hip-hop just happened to have the baggage that it does of violence and degradation of women and those sorts
yeah,
of things?
Yeah, our argument would be, no, it isn't just happenstance. It's
mm-hmm.
just not purely an accident that these things go together. Just like, and if you want to turn the tables, classical music tends to have its own kind of baggage.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
The snootiness,
elitism,
or the elitism,
or, right.
or whatever, that there's a different, and this is a point well made by some people who are using a Hey You Too argument,
yeah.
Trying to defend rap, turning it back on classical music, is that there is a sort of worldliness that can be associated with classical music.
Sure.
And that's true, but it's a different sort. And I'm not saying it's good.
Right.
But the reality is, it's a different kind.
Right.
And
because of the nature of the medium.
Because of the nature of the medium.
Mm-hmm.
That different expressions, because they do carry meaning. How? I don't know. It's a mystery. That's mysterious mm-hmm. to me. But because they do carry meaning, it's expressed certain ways.
Yeah. So let's move the question then away from the how, because we're admitting that it's difficult, not that we shouldn't strive to parse the meaning, but to exactly explain how it communicates is difficult. But let's move to the why. Why are we saying that a musical form expresses values? We're talking in terms of culture here. Why isn't it just neutral? Why does it carry meaning that has value?
Yeah, we as people, as image bearers, we use form to say something,
mm-hmm.
right? We use literature, we use architecture, we use all of these. I was reading an article just recently. I think it was from a secular perspective, and the idea that music means nothing would be very offensive to many composers, you know, because they're using it to say something.
Yeah.
And because they're using it to say something, because we are image bearers, everything we do as image bearers is under the authority of the Lordship of Christ,
mm-hmm.
right? And because of that, it is all subject to Him, which means that it has to say the right things. It has to say them the right way, which means that it is irremediably at every point moral.
Hmm.
And that would be the I think governing this whole issue of form is because we're doing it, we're either doing it recognizing the Lordship of Christ, or we're doing it in a way that denies the Lordship of Christ.
Yeah, to say it's neutral, we're almost denying the fact that it is a way to communicate.
We're asserting that there are inches in the world over Christ, over which Christ doesn't say mine.
Yeah, well, that's very true, and it's almost dangerous. And I think John McAgena has a great article on this that he presented at ETS. That it's almost Pelagian to say that it does not have a moral component, because we're almost denying that our depravity as sinful human beings, even believers who still fight the remaining sin, cannot produce something that communicates sinful values.
Yeah, but I do think there are theological consequences of asserting that there are things about which God doesn't care.
Hmm.
And I think those are significant. And it's not to say that there is nothing disputable in the Christian life. Paul clearly tells us in Romans 14 that there are things that are disputable.
Yeah.
But I think at least within the framework of my understanding of what God requires of me, there's nothing in my life that is not tinged in some way with morality and submission to the Lordship of Christ.
Especially means of communication.
Sure.
I think the biggest category error that is made, because like I mentioned before, you'll often hear people say, well, music is like a gun. It's neutral. How we use it is what affects morality. I agree 100% that in and of itself, an object is neutral. It's how we as humans use it. But the problem is when you get to the point of a song, and when you group songs together into forms by their common characteristics, we've already entered the category of use.
Yeah.
And so it's a significant category error to say that a song is like a gun. I could admit music as theory is like a gun. In and of itself, the concept of music is neutral.
Sure.
But once a human being takes the elements of music and puts them together in a form of communication, now that is communicating either good or evil, or certainly a mix of the two.
Sure. Yeah. It means something.
Right.
And that's, to me, that's just kind of a bottom line assertion that we want to make in this whole debate is when you use a certain form, it means something. And we may need to do some serious work to parse the meaning of that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we would argue that it's possible for a person to be mistaken about the meaning of a form. And just like it's possible, and I don't think this is any more a radical suggestion, just like it's possible for someone to be mistaken doctrinally, sincerely
sure.
mistaken.
Because we're fallible.
Because we're fallible. Yeah. Because we're not Pelagian, because we believe in total depravity and that depravity affects all of our person, it is possible for me to be sincerely mistaken about the meaning of a verse or about the meaning of a form. And so I'm not denying the sincerity, but I can argue that someone is missing the point.
And so while some associational baggage is arbitrary, conventional, like our example of Glorious Things of the Air Spoken Austrian Hymn, what we're then saying, though, is that with the issue of hip-hop, we at least have to ask the question, is that associational baggage there because the music actually communicates messages that fit with that associational baggage?
Yeah, and I'm going to argue that that is in fact the case.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is true, and if that's true, at the very least. So let's back it up. If we say hip hop often talks about drugs, I think we're going to be hard pressed to say that there's something in the form of hip-hop that's somehow tied to drugs.
Right, absolutely.
That seems a bit far removed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I had mentioned, I believe, in the previous podcast about the fact that hip-hop and rap does seem to have a heavy dose of ego
mm-hmm.
involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
The form itself is very much that way.
Assertiveness.
Yeah, in a way that, listen to me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say something that I don't intend to be offensive, but I think is probably true. If we use hip hop then for the cause of Christ, let's compare it to preaching and preaching styles.
Hmm.
There is a certain way of presenting the gospel that, and fundamentalism in particular has been guilty of fostering this,
mm-hmm.
of an approach in the pulpit that is full of ego.
Yeah.
Right? And
we're just as much opposed to that as we are to that in music.
Oh, we are. And the guys that are going to be pro hip-hop are going to be very anti-Jack Hiles.
Yeah.
Right? And we're going to be just as well. That,
right.
There's some, you watch video clips of some of the, you know, in many ways his heyday was far before our time.
Right.
You watch the videos, you listen to the audio, and it's just appalling that it was about him.
Right.
And his preaching style was about him. And I'm concerned, at least, that Christian hip hop has taken a form that is irreducibly egocentric,
mm-hmm.
and is using it to present the gospel. But the approach to presenting the gospel is every bit as in your face and contentious as certain forms of preaching that we're really trying to move away from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like I said, I say this cautiously. I throw it out there for consideration, but I think it's worthy of consideration.
Yeah. Well, where I'd like to go next time then is even if we admit this, even if we say this music is communicating, what is to say that we can't redeem it for Christ? What is to say that we can't take that and transform it under the Lordship of Christ and use it for gospel purposes? So we'll make that our focus of discussion next time.